Madison are still high. Police have gone from throwing tear gas to throwing epithets around. It's been a little chaotic. Monday night, tear gas was thrown. And at peaceful protesters, it all started because a few bad apples decided to throw bottles and what seems to be a Molotov cocktail. And the police reacted by pretty much being a SWAT team. They had, 28 guys, and there was this truck full of people, and they arrested all the people in the truck, and it was bad. But tensions are still high. Peaceful protests are still going to go on tonight, as of this recording, August 20th. They will probably continue tonight. I don't know how long they will continue, but they will continue. How long the media will cover this, who knows? There will eventually be some story that'll take over, that'll be on their lexicon that they will suddenly care more about than Ferguson. But got a little tense yesterday, and not in Ferguson, but in St. Louis, in the north side of St. Louis. There was a man who was shot, 25-year-old man who was shot for allegedly stealing energy drink and snacks. I believe it was snacks, but he stole two energy drinks and like a thing of like Cheetos or something. And the police shot and killed him. Granted, this story was a little different. He pulled out a knife. And the officers felt threatened. This is a judgment call where, and this was all on tape too, mind you. So this was all caught on tape. Unlike the Michael Brown case until afterwards, unless it was caught on tape and we just don't know about it, which I doubt very much that the Michael Brown case was caught on tape. But this man basically tried to come at them with a knife. He took out a knife, and the police shot and killed him. You could argue if it was justified. They did feel threatened, granted, but that doesn't mean you shoot and kill him. If you feel threatened, then get out your stun gun and tase the guy. You know that's why it's there. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't speak tonight. To take care of the situation and not turn it into a homicide, basically. And a justified homicide, we could say. And that's confusing, because apparently there's only two courses of action. You're threatening me? I'm going to kill you. You're threatening me? I'm going to subdue you. There's the word. So I'm going to subdue you. This was a man who could have been easily subdued, but instead he was shot and killed. We could argue if that's right or not, but it happened, and he's dead, and he unfortunately can't speak for himself. And so I was surprised that people weren't rioting last night, that people weren't, busting windows and ruining stores, because they took another one. That, again, surprised me, but it was peaceful last night up until about, it was definitely after MSNBC went off the air, and it was definitely after I went to bed, because you can always tell when MSNBC is like, okay, nothing's happening here, we'll just go back to our we'll go back to the repeats of our programs from earlier in the night. And that's what they did, and I kind of clocked out after that, because they were live the other night, and I was watching them, but they weren't last night. So this definitely, what I'm about to say, definitely happened probably 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and basically, an officer basically had, I believe was an AR-15, And he was pointing it at a guy saying, I'm going to fucking shoot you. Watch yourself. And the guy's going, whoa, whoa. And the guy videotaping is going, filming it, who's going, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't say that. You know, you're going to shoot him? Really? Do you think that's necessary? And the guy goes, the guy looks at him and goes, and so this police officer is basically just throwing around cuss words. He said, oh, fuck this, fuck that, fuck you, fuck all you, you know. Basically, it was inappropriate, and it was unnecessary to the highest degree. But the guy looks at him, and he says, what's your name? You know, because when the public has a right, if they see something that they don't feel is justified, they can ask the officer for his badge number and or name. You know, there's no secret law saying you can't do that. You can do that. So the guy filming it asks, what's your name? As in, we need to talk to someone about this. Say, hey, Officer Johnson was pointing an AR-15 and telling us to go fuck ourselves. And so the guy looks at him and says, what's your name? The cop with the AR-15, who was just a moment ago threatening to kill the guy, says, go fuck yourself. That was his answer. Not, Officer Johnson, if you have a problem, tell it to my supervisor. It was just, go fuck yourself. Because I'm above the law. I'm supposed to serve and protect, so that makes me above the law. Because brute force and threatening people with guns, assault weapons, is totally how police should be doing their jobs and telling the people to go fuck themselves. Well, fortunately, we got some justice for that part. And it turns out the officer wasn't from Ferguson or even from St. Louis. He was from a St. Louis suburb. And today his department put him on indefinite suspension. And they didn't put him on indefinite suspension because he threatened to kill a guy with his assault weapon. They put him on suspension because he just said the word fuck. That's what they said in their statement. They said, we don't condone his language. But you don't condone his action? You don't condone the fact that the whole reason the language started was because people were going, you're putting a gun in our face? Apparently, the police were fine with that. But they put him on suspension regardless for his language. And so he's not patrolling the streets of Ferguson with his AR-15 tonight. He is at home pretending to patrol the streets of Ferguson. And so it's gotten crazy, and there's no end in sight. The people will eventually have to go back. That town will have to go back to normal. People have to go back to work. School was supposed to start last Thursday, and it's been pushed back to Monday. And it's been pushed to Monday because of all this. Everything has to go back to normal. Justice won't be done for a while. The grand jury won't finish its proceedings until October. Stuff like this takes a long time, and while I agree with pretty much all of what the protesters are saying, there comes a point where you gotta wrap it up, because justice will hopefully be done at some point. And they can just as easily come back if justice is not done. If justice is not done, easily the same thing that we've seen the past 11 days can happen again. But this can't go on forever. It just can't. And you feel bad for... You feel for the people who are protesting, but you also feel bad if you're, well, not so much if you're a school child, but if you're the parent of a school child, because, you know, you want your child to go back to school at some point. And so that's what it's come to. And Ferguson will just have to deal with this. But I think what we've seen was, and earlier tonight I was watching Chris Hayes, and All In with Chris Hayes, I should say, on MSNBC. And he was, earlier today, he did an interview with the mayor, Jason Knowles, the third of Ferguson, who, shocking, is a Republican, because that's what happens when you have elections in April. Nobody votes, and you could have a mayor seat or a city council seat till you die. And he was interviewing him, and the thing I found amazing about that interview was that he took Chris Hayes 2 miles away from where the action was to, like, this just, like, street where it was all nice homes, and it was just, it wasn't, you, it was basically saying, like, this is the white part of town, and there's, as you can see, it's quiet, and there's nothing going on here, we're just a peaceful town, that's the black part. And so he was interviewing, and so, and I think you could tell that Chris Hayes, after the interview was over, was kind of just, like, shocked that, like, the mayor was doing this. Like, his point was, no, those are the African-American parts. The white parts here in town are, that they're like this. They're nice and quiet. He took them 2 miles away. And his point was basically, no, that's not the real Ferguson. This is the real Ferguson. Like, that's what he was saying. His point was, what's happening there, those people, even though they live in poverty, you know, these are the people that live here long term. They're the real Fergusons. And he was making the point that the people who lived in those apartments on the street that Michael Brown was shot and killed, he was making the point that, first of all, he was referring to the African-American community as them. He was calling them them. Okay? Let's get that out of the way first. He was referring to them as some sort of, you know, alien creature from Xenu and not American citizens or citizens of Ferguson. And so his point was basically that them who live on the street at the apartments where Michael Brown was shot and killed, they only live there for 6 months and they leave. And some of the people who've lived in the townhouses nearby longer are a little perturbed by it because there's always all sorts of action. Like, his point was basically, the black people come and go. That was his point. They live in the low-income housing, and they come and go. And the people don't like it. The people are a little perturbed by it. Like, that was his point. And there's such a disconnect between the mayor of that town and the people of that town. Such a disconnect. Because this guy's going, no, this isn't a racial issue. He went on MSNBC with Tamron Hall the other day and said that. This wasn't a racial issue. And the thing I found amazing about that episode of All In With Chris Hayes was just before, a segment or two before, Chris Hayes was interviewing the mayor of St. Louis, who's a Democrat. And the mayor of St. Louis has done a whole hell of a lot more for this situation, even though it's not even the town he presides over. He's done a whole hell of a lot more for this issue than the mayor of Ferguson has. You know, when that guy was shot yesterday, it was in St. Louis. What did the mayor do? He called the family. He apologized to the family. He told them, you know, my condolences and all that. And he took care of the issue. He had to make sure that an issue like that never happened. This is a guy who's on top of things. This is a guy who understands the issue. This is the guy who sees the Ferguson issue as a racial issue, unlike the mayor in denial, Mr. Jason Knowles of Ferguson, who clearly doesn't understand the grievances of the African-American community there, because, you know, he's white. And, yeah, so it was a very stark contrast, but that was a very telling interview, because Chris Hayes could have said, no, let's not go 2 miles away. Let's go to where the action's been happening and walk down the street and have an interview. And instead, the mayor takes him, you know, in the subdued, quiet affluent area of Ferguson. Like, this is not what Ferguson is. And apparently the viewers of MSNBC are supposed to believe that and go, oh, okay. Okay, so it's just one little section of town. Bullshit. Bullshit. And so that's what's happening in Ferguson. And again, we go, and switching gears, I should say, ISIS, all the same, in Iraq has beheaded American journalist James Foley, who's been in captivity for 2 years. Very disturbing. I have not seen the video. The video was actually uploaded to YouTube, but YouTube immediately took it down per the requests of the government and people, because it obviously was, violated their guidelines, because it was a beheading. But this morning, the New York Post, classy as always, they basically, they had a headline, and then the picture this morning was a still from the video of the member of ISIL who did the beheading having the knife right to his neck, just as he's about to behead the dude. The guy, I should say. The gentleman. So that was classy of the New York Post, the newspaper that New Yorkers wipe their ass with. And we also found out today that the U.S. actually tried to save James Foley and failed at it, which was incredibly shocking. And so you're going to see, suddenly it went from, we're going to help the Yazidi people stuck on the mountain, to airstrikes, to bombing the shit out of various parts of Iraq where the U.S. wants to take out ISIL. And I can't say that it's the greatest decision to make. I mean, the U.S. has enough problems to begin with. The last thing we need to be is the world's police. And I think that sending humanitarian aid definitely to the Yazidi people, as we did, was a good thing to do. But other than that, leading up to the beheading of James Foley, to the death of James Foley, you know, the case for bombing the shit out of Iraq was not as high as it suddenly is now, because now we have an American life lost. And it'll be interesting to see what the White House does there. But it's, they're in a sticky spot, because the last thing you want to do is go back to war, go back to the war that caused this. But ISIS has, again, and this isn't the only journalist that ISIL has in captivity that they've kidnapped. There's at least another journalist who they have threatened in a video, saying that we will cover this man in blood, we will kill this man. And ISIL has, again, threatened the United States with killing another one of our journalists. And they're kind of thinking that we're going to react to that. It's to provoke us, basically. The whole point of that video that they released of, you know, blood on the U.S. flag, saying we will cover, you know, we will cover you in blood, or something like that, in the subtitle, that was only to provoke us, to go, come on, big boy, bring it. That's basically what they wanted us to do. They want us to be provoked by that, and they want us to react to that. There has to be some sort of strategic way to deal with ISIL, and I can't say that there really is, because they've taken over great big cities in Iraq. They've kind of actually helped people in a sense, because they've turned on water and given people food. They're good government terrorists, as Tom Hartman said earlier today. And so ISIL is gaining power. They're gaining power. They're a terrorist organization, and the U.S. I don't think is gonna be, you know, I don't think the U.S. is gonna bomb them, but I think, well, here's the thing. That video was released because they said, if you keep doing the airstrikes, we will kill this journalist. I don't know who the journalist is. I have to look into that. But regardless, they have another journalist in captivity, or journalists. I'm not incredibly sure. But they have a journalist, regardless. And they released that video basically saying, bomb us again, we'll kill another one of your people. And so that puts the U.S. in a sticky spot, because you kind of want to call their bluff, because you kind of want to wonder, okay, you want to do it a second time, because you do it a second time, then we bomb the shit out of you. You ain't seen nothing yet, ISIS. ISIS hasn't seen anything yet. This is probably, what they've seen is probably the weakest of what the U.S. could actually be doing. Needless to say, some of what they've done has helped, but unfortunately, it didn't save James Foley, and who was in captivity for 2 years in Syria, and then eventually to Iraq. He fell captive to ISIS, or ISIL. And so watch that space, because suddenly things got a little more sticky for the President Obama and the White House Security Council, and the Pentagon and the DOD. They'll probably continue the airstrikes and assume that ISIS wouldn't provoke us by killing another one of our people, of our journalists that they have held captive, but we will have to see. Moving on, back to Ferguson, because I forgot I had a clip. In one of my previous episodes, I had done clips where basically all from Fox News, and I don't want to just rag on Fox News, because they're not the only cable news network that can be terrible and awful. MSNBC, who I only watch 3 shows on that network. Before I say anything else, I just want to say that conservatives think that liberals all watch the same shows. Like, at 5 o'clock, all us liberals drop what we're doing and we turn on the TV and watch Al Sharpton. We put it on MSNBC and watch Al Sharpton. Sorry, conservatives, we kind of don't do that like you guys. We all kind of don't, at 4 o'clock, gather around the TV and watch The Five. We don't really do that like you guys do. We're not that needy or that desperate. Or essentially that desperate to hear what we want to hear. And Fox News viewers very much want to hear what they want to hear. And Fox News is very good at the groupthink method of the cable news, and MSNBC, to itself, is very good at that. But no, conservatives, we all don't sit and watch The Ed Show and Politics Nation, that we don't drop what we're doing. I know liberals who don't even watch those shows because, A, they're terrible and should be canceled, especially Ed Schultz's show. Ed Schultz is done. I will sign any I will extend you an olive branch, conservatives, and tell you that I think MSNBC should cancel Ed's show. His 15 minutes of fame was done like 2 years ago, after they moved him out of the 8 p.m. time slot and basically said, yeah, you're kind of not an asset to this network, so we're going to put you on 4 o'clock at the weekends, where nobody will watch you. And then move you back to 4 o'clock on the weekdays, where you will suddenly act like you're anchoring the 7 o'clock show and have the ego of a 7 o'clock anchor, but you're really at 4 o'clock. I don't like Ed Schultz anymore, in case you get the drift. I stopped watching him 3 years ago regularly. He used to have a great show, and then suddenly became, all about Ed. Like, everything had to do with Ed. Like, oh, here's what I had to say yesterday. Here's what I had to say 2 weeks ago. In my book, it's self-promotion heaven, and his ratings are shit for that network. He's bringing that network down, and I think that they should get rid of they should get rid of him. You can't go from Alex Wagner, who's one of the three shows I watch, you can't go from Alex Wagner to Ed. Like you can't throw from the highbrow, very smart, very poignant commentary and guests from Alex Wagner's show and then go to, like, fucking Ed Schultz with his, like, cheesy picture graphics and yelling and always anchoring his goddamn show from his lake house in Minnesota. Like, and he always has the same guests on, and it gets tiring, and it the format's boring. He makes the show boring. He's a bloviating narcissist, and I also think an asshole who screwed Progressive Talk Radio, by the way, by just quitting 2 days before Memorial Day weekend and saying, ah, fuck this, I'm out of here. I'm not going to give you any advance notice. That was a real prick move on your part, Ed Schultz. Nice job. You fucked up, you know, Tom Hartman had to take up his slack and do 6 hours of radio for a week, 30 hours of radio for that week. Unbelievable. That was unbelievable. He fucked everyone over in that format. So shook it up. But the reason I want to talk about MSNBC was because last week on Morning Joe, and let me set this up, Morning Joe, which has a 7-year history of being awful and only a 3-year history of being any good, Morning Joe actually used to be pretty good, even though it's still an awful show. Like, Morning Joe used to be pretty good because of the guests, not because of Joe and Mika. It used to be good because they used to have great guests, and it used to be very, like, it was a very smart morning show in the sense that the guests had smart things to say, not Joe or Mika. And about 2 years ago, it just became the Joe Scarborough red alcoholic face extravaganza, or as Charlie Pierce calls it, Squint and the Meat Puppet, which is the most accurate representation of that show I have ever heard in my life. And it's become terrible. And Joe Scarborough has fallen to basically doing a show that's an audition tape for Fox. He really wants to get out of MSNBC, and you can tell that. But Morning Joe's the only show where you can have a conservative like Joe Scarborough on in the morning, and then the rest of it be like it's like a complete disconnect. The morning programming on that network to the nighttime programming, and then Joe Scarborough hates the nighttime shows, and then the nighttime shows hate Joe Scarborough. Like, Rachel Maddow's never been on that show, because if you go on YouTube and type in Rachel Maddow, Joe Scarborough, their little feud has gone on long before Rachel Maddow started hosting the Rachel Maddow show. Like, Rachel Maddow took him to task a few times in the 2008 Democratic primaries on that network, and it's a wonderful thing to watch. And there's a reason she never went on a show, and there's a reason Chris Hayes hasn't been in a show in, like, a million years. There's a reason Lawrence O'Donnell hasn't been in a show since the last time, I think, when he screamed at Scott McClellan, which was actually pretty riveting television, because they ended the interview, went to break, and Joe Scarborough was like, no, I'm doing this interview. I'll get audio of that next time and play it. It's on YouTube. That's a fun clip to play. But Morning Joe has a history of being terrible, and it has a history of Joe Scarborough being a narcissistic, bloviating, alcoholic red face, who I think is a prick, who every morning spouts off the same little talking points, and everything's always the Democrats' fault, and here's Paul Ryan to discuss that. The only show Paul Ryan will go on, the only show that really gets the major Fox Republicans on that network. Like, I think MSNBC just lets it stick around because of that, because of the guests they get. Other than that, they get rid of that show in a heartbeat. But it used to be a good show. And, of course, they've been tone deaf in covering Ferguson. And there's one clip that exemplifies this. Absolutely, 100%. And just to set it up, they're talking about Ferguson. They're talking about how Mika's introducing a clip. Mika Brzezinski's introducing a clip that of a Ferguson police or the county police. I think it's the county police. Basically yelling at this radio crew to turn off their lights and turn off that. Fuck you. You know, all that. Turn off fucking lights or I'll shoot you. Like, the officer threatened to shoot him. And Joe Scarborough got pissed off at that. He didn't get pissed off because an officer did and said that. He got pissed off because it was a 3-second clip and we don't know what happened. We have no idea what happened. And listen to this hissy fit, and then listen to the mayor of Baltimore try to bring some common sense, and then hear Joe Scarborough shut that down and just bitch about this for 5 minutes. Here it is.
Emerged that appears to show an officer threatening a local radio reporter. Take a look.
So,
that's
Mika?
Definitely that's one way to deal with a person standing in the street. But I think Mayor.
Well, wait. So hold a second.
The context.
Hold
may be
on.
Right from, I mean,
we have
been...
no idea what is going on there. We show
totally
3 seconds of clips, and by the way, we don't know what's happening
actually,
in the street.
Actually, what I'm talking about is how, at this point, law enforcement must feel. They must be very, very exposed, vulnerable, and really, really concerned about getting the job done and staying alive.
There was gunfire last night at police officers. There were Molotov cocktails thrown last night at police officers. We show a 3-second clip.
No.
Up and then there's a pregnant pause that hangs over this set.
Well,
we aren't in their positions, and we don't know what they're going through. Right now, we don't know what that officer was going through when he yelled that. I understand.
And nor do you know what the people of Ferguson are going through for years. I mean, you want
well, actually,
we should
actually,
put ourselves.
Actually, we do.
We should put ourselves in the position
actually,
of the police
actually,
officers.
Mayor,
but we also
we actually
should put
do know what's
in the position
going
of the
on,
community.
And we've reported it repeatedly. What's going on there? They are in a community that is underrepresented. There are 55 police mm-hmm. officers. 52 of those police officers are white. It's a disgusting situation. And we have condemned it on this show for good reason, and they can't expect to have community support. The question is, what do we do to stop the bleeding now? What do we do to stop the violence now? And that's what I'm asking you. Okay, we can't do what we've done in the past. They're trying to change. What do we do to get peace on the streets tonight?
I think the police officials have to show the community that they're willing to step up and to say that this is wrong. They took a giant step backward I'm talking about the chief of police, not Captain Johnson. I'm talking about the same one that released a of Michael Brown, allegedly of Michael Brown in the video store. You can't do that and expect support from the community. They had to expect that there was going to be a response, and it was going to be negative. They chose that path. Now they have to fix it.
Fascinating. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, thank you very much for being on the show this morning.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to...
No. I mean, listen, let's talk about this.
Okay.
When you loot...
I don't think you okay.
I do understand all too well. When you loot and you cause damage to property... and you fire bullets at police officers, and you throw Molotov cocktails at police officers, then at that point, you were opening the door and basically begging authorities to do what they did last night and what we were condemning them for doing a week ago.
So I think we're saying the same thing. What I was trying to say is I don't think you understand why I showed that clip. I don't necessarily claim that officer or that law enforcement, I don't know exactly where that law enforcement person came from, but whoever it was, I'm not saying that he was abusing the radio reporter. I'm saying you could hear the panic in his voice because things are so bad there. One other concept may be, what else would you do at this point if you see anybody out past the curfew? You panic.
I think there's another scenario, though, where the reporter may have been in harm's way. I mean,
right.
What I heard, and this goes to how
exactly.
This is very much in the eye of the beholder. I mean, I think that you know, if you watch the reporters, this network especially, who report from war zones, they listen to the military voices on both sides because their lives are often in danger. That, to me, sounded like a voice telling that reporter to get down because he could have been in danger. So
yeah.
It's very precarious to sit here and try to impose.
But he was saying he would shoot him.
Well,
you know?
but
so it's
you know,
how it's how
maybe with a rubber bullet to get him.
No,
we just don't know what's going on. And I'm really. with reporters making themselves part of the story. There's enough suffering on the ground from the people that live there that I'm
by the way, there's a lot of that going on.
Reporters being part of this.
Making themselves part of the story.
Yeah, it's just not as compelling to me as, you know, we were talking at 6 o'clock about the people that live here day in, day out. I asked why Ron Johnson isn't capable of being the element that changes things on the ground. And he said because there are so many disaffected.
Oh, Joe, oh, Joe, oh, Joe, come down from your ivory tower and get a grip on reality. Yeah, he knows. Don't you guys know? He knows. Joe Scarborough understands this. He knows. Like, it's like, well, huh? When the mayor of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings, who has another last name, when Stephanie Rawlings, the mayor of Baltimore, is like, well, you don't know what's going on in the people in Ferguson's mind. And he's like, yeah, I do know. I do know that. It's like, no, you don't. First of all, he criticized Wesley Lowery, the Washington Post reporter who's been doing fantastic reporting from Ferguson and got arrested. He basically criticized and lambasted him, Wesley Lowery, for being arrested and doing his job. And Wesley Lowery was like, fuck you, Joe Scarborough. Why don't you come down here and see what it's really like? But, and again, when I say Joe Scarborough is a bloviating narcissist, that clip exemplifies that because he knows. Like, oh, I'm Joe Scarborough. I know in my cushy MSNBC studio. I understand what's going on. No, fuck you, because I know. Like, oh, you may be an expert on this subject, but I know. I mean, never mind. But I was going to say something way too personal. But the point is that anything to defend the police, right? Anything to defend the police. It wasn't like, wow, that's shocking and inappropriate. It's instead like, whoa, we don't know what was going on. Yeah, because the guys totally had guns. That's what was going on. The guys who in that clip had guns, and they took it out of context and played it for 3 seconds. That's why the police were so justified in that clip. You could totally hear the justification of the police in that clip. Totally. So let's defend that. Let's defend that. And when you do that, you become worse than Fox. You become worse than right-wing talk radio. And speaking of right-wing talk radio, I do want to mention that we're taking the authority of Darren Wilson from a caller on a right-wing talk radio show. Not just any right-wing talk radio show. Dana Loesch's piece of shit right-wing daytime talk show that nobody listens to. She's an ideologue, and suddenly MSNBC and CNN are playing this clip from this lady who knows the wife of Darren Wilson, who's claiming that she was totally justified in killing Michael Brown. Maybe if that was maybe if it wasn't coming from right-wing talk radio, I would believe it. But anything to shit on the African-American community. Anything to shit on the dead black man. Anything to defend the police and their actions. The police could have mowed down a million people. And people would defend him. I'm sorry. When the KKK is raising funds for a police officer shooting an unarmed black man, when the KKK is raising funds for that officer, you really need to start questioning your position if you really want to defend this officer. And I'm not equating that if you believe this, you're part of the KKK. But I'm saying that those who are defending the officer are the KKK. They're raising money for this officer. Whether or not the officer is going to take the KKK money is beyond comprehension. I doubt very much that he would accept a check from the, you know, White Knights of Columbia, Missouri, or wherever the fuck it's coming from. But they've raised, last I checked, like $12,000, which somebody gave money. Somebody went online and said, oh, the KKK. That's totally worth giving my money to because, you know, sorry, but I defend the police in every single action they do. And again, there was this, like, justification of the police in that Morning Joe clip. There's this justification of, like, well, we don't know what happened. We kind of do know what happened. That clip was a very good sign of what happened. It was basically saying to credentialed press, fuck you, get out of here, we don't want you here because you're reporting on what we're actually doing. And I think come next week, if the press is still there and there's still camera crews and anchors there who aren't local news, you're going to begin to see pushback from the police, if not the residents at some point, but definitely the police. The police will begin pushing back. They'll start arresting more journalists. They'll start arresting cameramen or anchors or whoever. Shameless. They'll be shameless, as if they aren't already shameless. I don't think in the police academy, not that I know about the police academy, but I don't think in the police academy, the answer to the test is, what do you do in a situation where you feel threatened? Kill the motherfucker. That's what you do. Yeah, because that's totally a justification. If that's the case, if I felt threatened and I use stand your ground law, if I live in a stand-your-ground state and I felt justified in killing someone, again, I know the right-wingers, you hate it when somebody brings up the stand-your-ground laws. I know you hate that, even though you helped create them. I know you hate it when I use it back on you, but I'm going to use it back on you because that's what the fucking law is. The fucking law is being able to stand your ground and kill someone because you felt threatened and stood and protected your property. And that's what the standard ground law is. So if I felt justified in killing someone who was on my property, let's say it was somebody cutting through my backyard to get home, and I'm like, ooh, a burglar, and I shoot and kill the guy, I shouldn't have to go to court because I was justified. It's roughly the same. A human life is a human life, no matter who takes it. Okay, it doesn't matter if it's a police, it doesn't matter if it's a regular citizen. It's a human life, and anyone who's anyone should be held accountable for that. And the point I was just making was that people do it and get away with that. We've seen that with the George Zimmerman case. We've definitely seen that with the George Zimmerman case. But it's definitely a racial factor. There's definitely a racial factor to it. Because Marissa Alexander fires a warning shot and suddenly she's 20 years in jail. She's facing a 20-year sentence. But George Zimmerman can shoot the unarmed black teenager. But when the African-American woman is standing her ground, oh, well, she has to go to jail. Disconnect. Complete and utter disconnect between how we perceive what is a threat and how we react to that threat. Complete disconnect. And the answer to when we feel threatened, I'm sure every single person who has ever existed has felt threatened in some way or another by someone. But I don't think the reaction in someone's mind is, oh, I'm so threatened, I should kill this guy. Because I'm so threatened. I'm sorry. Killing someone is not the answer for anything. No matter how big or small they are, or how big or small their crime is, or how big or small their words are, or actions. They don't deserve to die. They don't deserve to die. I'm against the death penalty for that reason. They'll die. The people who get the death penalty, boy, that's a weird, I went right to the death penalty, but I'll make this point quickly. The people who get the death penalty are already facing life terms. Just leave them in solitary. There's no need to kill them, because they're going to die at some point. Because they're going to be in jail for the rest of their life. No need to kill them. No need to give them the electric chair, or hang them, or whatever the fuck, they're doing nowadays. Giving them lethal injections that are bad concoctions and they don't die within 10 minutes. That's the case for a moratorium on the death penalty nationwide. But again, we need to value a human life. And I know conservatives that you're going to say, well, abortion. Okay. The difference between being pro-life in the sense that it's not abortion, the difference of being pro-life in which you're just a fucking person who's intimidating a woman walking into a Planned Parenthood, no matter what. The difference between that is, you can value all life. You know, you can value all life. And you can be pro-choice. Being pro-choice is being for abortion. Let's get that out of the way. Being pro-choice means that a woman, hence the word fucking choice, a woman has the choice to do with whatever the fuck she wants with her body. And no group of Christians standing on the street waving a picture of a dead fetus on the sidewalk is going to change that. Not at all. If you want to keep doing that, fine. It's apparently your First Amendment right to be intimidating. It's apparently your First Amendment right. No buffer zones. Have at it. You can say whatever the fuck you want. It's public property. But there comes a point in which what you're saying turns into action. And that action is bombing an abortion clinic. Or going to the house of a doctor who performs abortion and threatening them. Or calling them. And standing outside their house and going, "Why are you killing babies?" That's what the pro-life movement is in this country. And it isn't even like, oh, if a woman's rape or is a victim of incest, it's like, nope. She has to have that baby because all life. We must value all life. All rape babies, all incest, all of them. No abortion whatsoever. And that's the platform of the fucking GOP in the South. The platform of the GOP in the South is get rid of all the abortion clinics. Possible. Get rid of them. Get rid of all the abortion clinics you can possibly get rid of, leaving only just a couple in, you know, the west side of the state and the east side of the state, you know, 300 miles apart. In Texas, it's like there's only like two left or seven, and they're going to close down another five because they didn't meet the fucking ceiling tile quota or whatever. Like, you have to have 126 ceiling tiles and you only have 53. We have to shut this clinic down. Like, that's what the legislation is. It's not so much like we as the state have the authority to close this abortion clinic. Totally not the case. Totally not the case. It's the state giving themselves the power to close the abortion clinic if they don't meet certain ridiculous criteria. Right? Like, once in a while, it's like a drop. Like, yes, I'm here for your unannounced ceiling tile count. All right, I need to count and make sure you have 127 ceiling tiles and you can stay open. Oh, sorry, you only have 52 because this isn't a fucking skyscraper or a five-story building. So, yeah, you didn't meet the ceiling tile quota, so we have to shut down your clinic. And all the women who are wanting, so we're seeking your services, will have to go elsewhere. You know, it's like, at what point do women revolt? Like, at what point? Like, there has to come a point in which women say, oh, shit, they did what? They passed another abortion law? Oh, well, fuck this, I'm gonna protest. Like, and like, the thing I love to say about the war on women, which is true and real, is it's a very good tactic for the Republicans because they cause it. And then they go, oh, well, why are the Democrats only talking about reproductive rights and abortion? Us Republicans, we want to talk about the economic rights of women. It's like, what, you think the Democrats don't want to talk about it? Here you are, getting rid of their abortion rights and then throwing it back at us and going, look what the Democrats have done. I know I've said that before, but that's the point that needs to be made. That's their tactic. And the low-information, uninformed people who are going to believe that shit, who, you know, their only political authority is Jesus Christ, those people are going to believe that. And then they're going to go, well, I value all life, and I just vote Democrat. You know, if conservatives don't want to be painted with a broad brush, they should stop electing fucking people who belong in the fucking Dukes of Hazzard. Really. If conservatives want to be cool or hip and, you know, be part of the millennial crowd and stuff, then they need to stop electing and sounding like fucking Alabama in 1953. because that's what they're sounding like. And I'm not talking about the Jim Crow. I'm just talking about just the way they talk and the way they act and how women should act. How women should act. Women should be barefoot and pregnant. And then there's going to be conservatives go, that's not what we think. Well, tell that to your fucking party. Who said shit like that? And it's the same thing with race. I'm sorry. If you say you don't see race, then that's a very... First of all, you're in denial. Because that's just a roundabout way of, you know, saying that you have some prejudice, you have some suppressed prejudices that haven't come out. Saying, I don't see race, just only makes the problem worse. Because then it's like, oh, fuck you. Yes, you do. You totally see race. Conservatives loves to say that. There's a lot of loopholes in conservative arguments. You know, and I'm sure they'll love to say something about liberals. Oh, yeah, liberals. You know what? There are some liberals, others who are not named Ed Schultz, who Ed Schultz is like the worst. Ed Schultz is like the worst. Like, you could take, who's a liberal? Who's a good liberal? And if you say Ed Schultz, you lose. Stop. There are plenty of other good liberals who aren't, you know, intolerant. Who aren't stoking this, like, you know, every single Republican wants to kill you and take away your children and make you cut away your food stamps. There's no, like, Ed Schultz rhetoric that liberals think. And as you can see, based on the ratings, liberals are kind of getting tired of Ed shit. But to paint a broad brush as if all liberals are, like, fucking Al Sharpton, which I love, is, like, Al Sharpton. It's like, everything's Al Sharpton. As if somehow Al Sharpton is this, like, pivotal leader or the secret president of the United States who just, like, everywhere he goes, he's like, burn the motherfucker down, burn it down, we're starting a race war tonight. Like, that's suddenly the tactic of Al Sharpton. Like, that's always been the tactic. Always. And I'm not defending Al Sharpton. I just think it's bullshit to assume that Al Sharpton is this, like, purveyor of race relations. That all liberals love Al Sharpton. And that Al Sharpton is this just, like, person who just controls race relations in this country. Like, Fox News believes. Like, Fox News wants you to believe that. Oh, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, those thugs with their race wars. Look what they're doing. Every other word out of Bill O'Reilly's mouth is, this is the problem of the left and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. So let's bring on a couple white guys to talk about race. As I, Bill O'Reilly, professor of African American studies at Duke University, will tell you, shut up. I'm Bill O'Reilly. You know, we can point the finger at both sides and that will get us nowhere. But there comes a point in which the facts exist, and then there comes a point in which the conservatives just make up their own fucking facts. They make up their own fucking facts. They do. They just reach so up in their rectum. They get so deep up there, and they just pull something out that is just that you personally cannot believe is so asinine and so stupid and so just not even real or factual or based in reality that you go, Jesus fucking Christ, where did you get that from? I got it from the Heritage Foundation. Well, there we go. 53 minutes, I think, is enough. Covered a lot of ranting. Covered some, like, the first 25 minutes were pretty solid, and then it kind of went downhill once I got to the morning show clip. Then I started ranting, and then that's when it all went downhill, and people were like, I don't know if I should subscribe to this podcast anymore. I don't like how he yells at me. He is Ed Schultz, too. The problem is that I only just now figured out how to use my microphone, and turns out if you flip it upside down, you can actually get it in your face and talk. And so I'm not quite sure how the sound volume works, but I feel like if I talk a little louder, that the sound quality will be better. Because if I talk normally, like, hello, you know, like that, like, in my normal voice, like, I feel like that isn't loud. But anyway, I'll let you be the judge of that. And if you really feel passionately about the sound quality of this podcast, send me over a tweet. Just please, please send me your sound quality tweets. All right. Well, that's been a fun edition of Politics and Everything in Between. I'm Alex Mazza saying until then, try not to start a race riot. That's always a good sign. I'll see you on the flip side.